This is Roland. Today's topic is finding God. I get a lot of questions from people, a lot of questions come in via email from people who basically ask, how can I find God, or why haven't I found God, or I would like to find God. I'd like to sense His presence. I'd like to know that He's there. And I don't feel anything. I don't know that He's there. A lot of people say, why doesn't He answer my prayers? I pray and pray and pray, and I don't feel like He's answering my prayers. And so today's topic is finding God. Now, let's begin this way. Let us begin this way. We humans have fallen to a very, very low level. I know it may be a little hard to see initially for you, because that's not what we hear. You know, that's not what we hear, and that's not what we want to think. We don't want to think that we've fallen to a very low level. We want to think that we're getting better, and that we're actually doing rather well, and we're rising, and so on and so forth. That's what we want to think. And of course, if you go into the heathen, paganistic, amoral, degenerate world out there, they say, well, you know, there's evolution, and, you know, somehow this emerged from the slime, and then that emerged from the slime, and then this became that, and that became this, and all of a sudden an ape became a man, and so we're rising. See, and then they also say, well, then there's cultural progress. We're becoming more sophisticated and more tolerant and more understanding and smarter and all that kind of stuff. But the truth is, we're actually degenerating. We are now at the lowest level that we have ever been. And if you don't think that's true, then just go out and take a look around you and see how people live and see how they feel. And see what kind of lives they have, and what kind of contribution they make. There have been a few people. Few people have somehow. Occasionally, you have someone who rises up and makes a big contribution, and then that furthers human society. You know, technologically, perhaps. You'll have a Steve Jobs or an Albert Einstein, a Michael Faraday. Occasionally you'll have a Gandhi, a Moses. These few very noble people, you know, make a big contribution, and then we benefit from the contribution. But before you know it, you see everybody sliding back down into the slime again. And so when you look around today, you'll see how low we have fallen. Now, there are people who have somehow... Okay, so now having said that, you can see how if we've fallen very low, then that makes us very far away from God. See, if you get a dog or a cat or a mouse or a chimpanzee or a deer, you know, they may be very cute and very nice, but they're never going to know God. Impossible. Impossible. They cannot. They are incapable of knowing God. They don't have a consciousness. They don't have a soul like we humans do. Okay, so we humans do have that capability. However, Let's see what it is that stands in the way. So first of all, we're at a very low level. So there have been people, you know, was it Enoch, where it says in the Bible that he walked with God? That's such a beautiful expression. He walked with God. There have been some people from time to time who seem to have found a way to get close to God. And they try to write about it, but they're very hard pressed to show us the way. You know, they try. But getting close to God is something that each of us can find. You can't see a movie about it. You can't study your way to God or listen to a video, to an audio, or watch a video about it. See, if somebody else found God, then that's nice for them, but it's not going to help you. They might be able to give you a clue or two, but that's about it. See, that's just like me. I can give you some clues, but it's something that you have to do for yourself, just like the little child must take its first step. See, no one else can take the step for the child. He has to take his own first step. And so finding God is an individual thing. It's a very personal thing. It's not something that you can, you know, you can't go to a big rally somewhere or a big church meeting somewhere and, you know, it's not going to happen that way. You have to find God somehow within. You have to find God within. But you're not going to find it out, and you're not going to get any help from out in the world, because first of all, we've fallen very low. Very, 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 very low. People are very far away from God. And secondly, people have no interest. Most people, the vast majority of people, have no interest in finding God. In fact, that's the last thing they want to do. That's the very last thing. Never mind if they pay lips. They may pay lip service to it. They may even go to church. Although most people don't even do that anymore. At least in the past. You know, it was Ambrose Bierce. He was a satirist, Ambrose Bierce. You know, like Mark Twain said some very clever, pungent things about society. Ambrose Bierce did. Ambrose Bierce had a little dictionary, and he said hypocrisy. No, what did he say? He said hypocrisy is vice's tribute to virtue. Hypocrisy is vice's tribute to virtue. So you see, hypocrites, at least a hypocrite. See, back we always say, oh, hypocrites are so terrible. And Christ always railed against the hypocrites. Okay, we all know that people who are hypocrites, it's not a nice thing. And if we see a hypocrite, well, we don't like it. See, we look down on hypocrites. But we have fallen so low today as a society. We've fallen so low that people aren't even hypocrites anymore. See, they're just out and out disgusting. Out and out, they're just degenerate, amoral, immoral, hedonistic, sensuous slobs. See, I'm sorry. But that's what they are. They're just immoral. Many people are that way. And so they're not even hypocrite. Well, maybe they go to the opera or they listen to classical music. Maybe okay. You know, they say they're a Buddhist, you know, they try to act nice. So I guess there's still some hypocrisy there. But so don't expect help from other people. They have no interest in finding God. That's the last thing. See, the last thing a person would like is an encounter with God, because an encounter with God is an encounter with the truth, an encounter with a standard. And people do not want a standard. They don't want a standard. See, they don't want a transcendental, deep down, many, many people, see, they do not want a transcendent dimension. They don't want a Heavenly Father. See, they like the idea of the world being all there is, of some kind of an eternal universe that's just material. And they like that idea. They like the idea of incarnation. They like the idea of no God, or the idea of higher power, something like that, something vague. They don't mind that. See? They like that because that excuses and licenses their immorality. See? That's what it does. They can go ahead and be hedonistic, amoral and immoral, and that there's no higher standard. See? All right. So they do the last thing they would want. That's why they... Why do you think they killed someone like Christ, for example? Because he made them look bad. See, in his presence, with his shining light, his light shone so brightly that they were exposed. In his presence, they were exposed. You know, like if you tell a bad joke, you tell a naughty joke and nobody laughs, they all just look at you, there's silence. Or you're giving a speech and you say something a little bit off and then everybody just looks at you. You know how that feels? You feel like you have egg on your face? Well, okay. That's the way he made everybody feel. He exposed them for what they were, and they hated him. They hated that, see? That's why a lot of little children are driven insane, or a lot of little children are beaten up or killed, because of the brightness in the little child's innocent eyes looking at the monster that the little child has for a parent. Cannot bear to be observed with innocent eyes. The evil in the person cannot bear to be observed with evil eyes, so it flees. See, it wants to flee, and if it's the parent, and can dominate the little child, then it will try everything in its power to drive the child mad. See, or to slap the child around so the child will see. We're not allowed to see what we see. A lot of kids, a lot of families today, you're not allowed. Whoever's in charge, you know, mother who always has to be right and never wrong. She always has to be right and never wrong. So you dare not, you know, say that she's wrong or correct her. You have hell to pay. If you should not see her as being wonderful and see her as being right, then you'll have hell to pay. See? So a lot of families were children are not allowed to see what they see. Okay? So now we're getting a little closer to... So now you can see why most people never find God. Because they're not looking for Him. They're avoiding Him. They're avoiding truth. They're avoiding truth. They're avoiding a standard. See? And they're avoiding something that would shame their ego. See, they don't like shame. They don't like to be humbled. They're very prideful. See, people are prideful. So we have this pride. Okay? It does not like to be seen for what it is. And if we want to continue being prideful, then we need everyone around us to see us in a good light. Okay? And so we look for a religion that will see us in a good light. So a lot of people will look for a false religion. They'll look for a religion that will love them just the way they are and accept them just the way they are. So, of course, something like Buddhism, for example, where there is no God, well, that's acceptable to them, see? And then they can act nice and say they're very tolerant and so on and so forth, see, and accept everybody else the way they are, and they feel very self-righteous about that, see? Or some people will look for a religion that says, you know, Jesus loves you just the way you are. See, that's a very, very tempting but erroneous concept. Very tempting. Very seductive. It's very, very seductive. But the truth is that Jesus doesn't love us as we are. See, He loves us from what we are. See, He loves us from what we are. See, if you stop to think about it, let's say you were somewhere and here came a very proper person. I don't know if you remember Margaret Thatcher. There was a nice lady named Margaret Thatcher. She was Prime Minister of England, a very nice lady. And so let's say if there was Margaret Thatcher in a room, very proper, very noble lady, see, and there she was, and you enter that room, see, and you were to behave inappropriately or say inappropriate things or be rude or something like that, she would not love you for that. She would not love you for that. See, she would upbraid you. See, she would look at you sternly. Did you ever have a good teacher? See, a lot of us had a really good teacher, like a good English teacher. and she expected high performance from you. And she wouldn't accept slipshod work. She wouldn't accept your excuses. She expected high performance. See, if she had loved you the way you are, if she had said, there, poor dear, you know, you got everything wrong, but you get an A anyway. See, if she had loved you the way you are and hadn't corrected you and expected something better of you, see, we all need someone who can help us to be what we are, what we could be. If the teacher had, the good English teacher, the good math teacher had loved you as you were in your uncorrected wrong. See, some people don't even like to be corrected on a math. They don't even want to like to be corrected on a math test. They don't want to admit that they're wrong. See, they don't even want to admit that they made a mistake. People are so prideful. So that pride, see, that pride has to be penetrated. See, it has to be subdued. It has to be overcome. It has to be put down. Otherwise, that the cute little ego, see, will grow up to become a big, ugly ego, and eventually become a monster. See? Now, why do you think, for example, when you look at Hollywood, for example, you see the people there, and you look at so many of them are take drugs, see, cocaine or heroin, or they're alcoholics, or they end up committing suicide, see, or they take all kinds of medications. They're always going into rehab. Now, why is that? You would think they'd be happy. They're handsome, they're beautiful, they have lots of money, lots of friends, so on and so forth. It's because nobody really loves them. Nobody really loves them. Everybody kowtows to them, and everybody wants something from them, and everybody worships them. Nobody corrects them properly. See? Nobody really, really has an emotionless real love for them that would help them. Instead, all they do is get false love. See? False love of the world. So the false love of the world will definitely keep you from God. See? For example, knowledge. Raw knowledge can keep you from God. So you cannot study your way to God. As a matter of fact, in the Garden of Eden, it was knowledge. Remember, it was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's the thing that, one of the things that got them booted out of the Garden of Eden. See, Adam was not content just to quietly be in God's presence, see, and to quietly discover things. You know, like little children discover. Little children, each day, they leap from bed in the morning and run barefoot over the carpet, ready for a day of discovery, and they discover many wonderful things. They go outside, there's a butterfly, there are some beautiful rocks, there's something interesting there, there's a flower, see, there's a new word they learned in their book. It's a day of discovery, an adventure of discovery. That's the way we should learn our whole life. Some people keep that. Einstein was that way. That's why he kept a certain innocence about him, and why he continued to make discoveries, why he was a genius, because he kept that childlike quality. But what happens is, and see, that's what God wants. And he will he gives us intuition. See, so if you weren't corrupted, then you could discover everything you need to know about life and about God, about salvation and about God. See, you could discover everything that you need to know. Just intuit it. See, but what do we do? Well, we are forced to go sit in school, and we're forced to memorize facts, figures, and formulas, and sit around in boring classrooms from age, what, 5? Now they're trying to make all the kids go to preschool, so from age 5 or earlier all the way up through age 18, see, or beyond, 22. And so a person can become so corrupted by that you end up just, see, it separates you from your inner ground. It separates you from your intuition. It separates you from what you had, where you could have been an Einstein, a Madame Curie, a Stephen Jobs. See, you could have been an explorer, a Christopher Columbus. You see, you could have been a great scientist or something if you had stayed close to your intuition. But instead, see, you were separated from that, and you became transfixed and hypnotized by knowledge. And so eventually separated from learning from within, you become dependent. See, you become dependent on outside knowledge. You become dependent on somebody to spoon feed you knowledge. Okay, so you're separated from the way God wanted you to learn, which would be a discovery process. Discover who you are, how to grow, how to start, what line of work is right for you, start your own business. See, discover every day and every week, every month, discovering a little bit more, one step at a time, your life unfolds, see? Then eventually, perhaps later in life, see? Later in life, you begin to discover a little bit. You begin to discover of God, see? And from within, see? He begins to help you to intuitively begin to see some things that you need to know to make the rest of the journey. See, the rest of the human journey toward God, see? But instead, you became separated from that, and then resentment separates you even more from it. See, one, it's bad enough that you become corrupted, see? What happens to kids is that the pressure, the school, the ambition pressure, see, they ruin it. See, I never forget one time that there was a story, a cute little story about how there was some nice guy or nice lady, and the devil was sending his minions over there to try to corrupt a person and turn them into ruin them somehow. So they tried all kinds of things. They tried drinks and, you know, offering drugs and all kinds of stuff they offered, and nothing was working. And the demons or his minions, you know, came back and said, "Oh, geez, nothing's working." He says, "Well," he said, "you're being too obvious. It's got to be more subtle." He said, "Here's what you do. Wait until the person goes for a walk, see? And then say to the person, well, the reason you're going for a walk is so you can get exercise. The reason you're going for a walk is because you can lose weight, see? The reason is so you can, feel better. The reason is so you can have more power. The reason is so you can, you know, make more money, be in better shape and make more money, see? The point is that taking every innocent thing, see, which could be a joy and a discovery, and making it into a goal, see, so that adds a touch of ambition to it, and it ruins it. So you go to school, then they make you ambitious. They try to make you ambitious to study and learn and gain power and knowledge and greatness and glory and get big jobs and lord it over people, see, with knowledge. Well, some people conform to that, and they become the characterless conformists that end up ruining society. They eventually become the leaders that ruin everything, make all the wrong moves, and, you know, do bad things. They get into high positions and do bad things. It's where they could be doing good things, they do bad things. Often they, undercover of pretending to do good things, are really doing bad things. See, and it's all about the bottom line, and they'll do whatever they're told. See, they're characterless. You see them everywhere now, characterless people. You see them in the media. You see them in government. You see them in corporations. See, doing bad things. Things that are not good for the people. See, there's no love. It's all about money and more and greed. That's what it's all about, greed. And so it's not good, ladies and gentlemen. So there they are. So you have the characterless ones, and then you have the rebels, the ones that rebel against the pressure. They resent the self-righteous teacher, the phony teacher, the boring teacher. They resent having knowledge pushed upon them. They resent being tempted to be ambitious. So they become resentful, then they become the dropouts, see? They become the high school dropouts, the drug addicts, the gang members, See, but then, but the trouble is, then they end up conforming to another authority, which is just as bad. See, they rebel against the school, the phony school authority, and then they conform to the gang authority. That's just as bad. See what I mean? All right. So that's what happens. People become separated from a discovery process whereby they could learn of, gradually find God and learn of God through this inner discovery, intuitive, wordless process, a wordless way of knowing, a wordless way of learning. See, just like little children learn. But instead, they become separated from it. So then they become dependent on external knowledge. Then for the rest of their life, they become addicted and dependent upon knowledge. See? And so you see them staring at books and staring at the internet and Google searching things and sitting in classrooms and or standing in front of classrooms. And it's all about knowledge. But see, it took them away from innocence, took them away from intuition, and leads them away from God. See? But knowledge has become big business. See? Look at schools and universities, see, and then all the, it's big business nowadays. And so, and it's very clever and very powerful. So, there's another reason why we don't find God, you see? So I've given you several reasons why we don't find God. So you see now how hard it is. Now here's the other thing. The other thing is, like I said, a lot of people just have no interest in learn. They're just not interested in God. They're not even interested in truth. See, now some people have been brainwashed. A lot of us have been brainwashed, for example, into this thing that, truth is relative and your truth is just as good as my truth and there is no such thing as truth and so on. So we've been brainwashed with that. But some of us, see, some of us, we sense something wrong with that line of thinking. See, so we keep searching. But some people, the people who eventually find God, see, they search for Him and they yearn for Him. See, and they love the truth and they search for truth. See, they yearn for truth and they search for truth. And everywhere they go, they hear this and they hear that. Or they go to this church or this seminar or this group, see, or that internet site, or read this book, or go to that, attend that lecture, go to this class or that class. See, they always go and they listen and listen and listen, and some of the facts are right and some of it's right, but there's always something missing, or there's something that's not quite about it, or there's something deceitful about it. They're still searching. They just haven't quite found what they're looking for. See, it's just not quite. There's something missing, and they keep looking and looking and looking. They have this innate love of truth, and I think it's given to them by God. See, some people have it, and some people don't. Now, you say, well, that's not fair. Well, you know, God makes millions of deer and millions of dogs and cats and millions of horses and, you know, mice and fish. God makes all kinds of these creatures, and He makes them all, but they're incapable of knowing Him. See, so they live and die just as animals do. They live and die, and there's no injustice in it. That's just the way they are. That's what they do. See. And so, He makes millions and billions of people, see? And some of them have no interest in Him, no interest in learning of Him. They have no love of truth within. Okay? But then there are some who do. Now, you can't tell the good ones from the bad ones. You could have a room full of people and you have no idea. See, you could be on, you know, walking through town and there's somebody laying in the gutter. Somebody laying in the gutter looks like the worst person in the whole world, but you never know. Deep in that person, he may love truth. He may be all messed up because he hated the hypocrisy that he saw. He hated injustice. He became corrupted by anger and he dropped out, see? So he might be, there may be nothing there, but then again, there might. You really can't, you don't know. You can't tell the good ones from the bad ones. However, when someone comes forward who begins to speak, for example, then you'll start certain people that gravitate toward, they gravitate in one direction or another. For example, let's say there's a party. This is not my little story. I heard somebody else tell it, but it's very good. Let's say there's a party and there's a lot of people there, a lot of people. They're all tinkling glasses and talking, nice cocktail party or whatever. And then at one end of the room, there's Hitler. Hitler's there and he starts talking. And at the other end of the room, there's Jesus. Jesus is talking. Gradually, you will see a dividing. You'll see some people, gravitating toward Hitler. They go over and listen to Hitler and they kind of like what Hitler's saying. And then other people gravitate over toward Jesus. They kind of like him. They kind of like what he's saying. See? So there's a dividing up, and you're amazed. So some of the people that you knew could even be somebody in your own family, your own partner, your own, your own parent or sister or brother or cousin. There they are over there liking Hitler, and you can't believe it. And at the other end of the room, there's someone that you didn't think they were a nice person at all, and there they are. See, they're gravitating toward Jesus. So you see how that works. So you see a dividing up in society too. Now you see issues around where there's a dividing. You can't be of, of two minds on certain things, certain topics, like abortion, for example. You can't be of two minds on it. See. You're either for it or against it. So some of these issues are arising where you see a dividing of people. So now you see another thing, and that is this. Here's another very important thing, but let's take a little tiny break right now, and then I'll share with you something very, very beautiful. We're talking about finding God and why it seems like God is far away and why some people find God and some never will. Some have no interest in it. We talked about that. But now I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about love. God created many things. But one thing that he created, which is really, really cool, that we don't really think about very much, and that is that he created love. We marvel when we see all the beautiful plants and animals and the beautiful mountains and lakes and forests. We marvel. And we marvel when we see, science. Like electromagnetism and gravity and all these beautiful scientific principles that we have discovered. Took us a long time. You see how long it takes humankind to see how low. See another evidence that we have fallen very low. See, I just want to mention this one more time because it's hard for people to see. They think, well, we've risen so far. Well, we have, but look how long it took us to even learn something basic like about germs. See, it took, what, hundreds, thousands of years for people to learn about germs. And even today, if you go out in public, despite all that we know about, safe practices so we don't catch colds and so on. Now, what do you see people going into bed and not washing their hands in the bathroom? After they use the bathroom, you see them not washing their hands or before they eat. And you see people coughing into their hand. See, they haven't even learned sleeve and shoulder coughing. See, so they haven't learned it. They haven't seen that that is the way you go to go. Parents aren't teaching it. We're not learning it in school. So you have people coughing into their hand. What could be worse? We all know that it's touching things is where we get the germs. So there's a person, they cough into their hand, and then they shake your hand, or they hand you something and you take it. The hand they just coughed into. You see what I mean? So they've hardly learned that. Ancient civilizations, you know, like the Romans, for example. The Roman civilization was once very great, very powerful, and it fell. It fell, utterly fell to destruction. And if you read many, many sources, very many sources, not only Christian sources, but secular sources and secular historians, it's all agreed that sexual immorality became a big problem. Rome was bad enough. See, without the Christian influence, it was bad enough. Life was devalued. There were children that were just simply abandoned because they didn't want the children. There was all kinds of sexual immorality. And it got worse and worse and worse. And the morals got worse and worse and worse. And eventually you had the Colosseums and you had gladiator fights. See, and people were betting, gambling on who would win gladiators were fighting, that sort of thing. See? Well, look at American society. That's where we're going now. You know, with all the abortions. How many abortions have there been every year? Hundreds of thousands? I don't even know. How many million of children have been murdered through abortion? And look at how entertainment is degenerating. Look at people gambling. Lottery, state-sponsored gambling, see? And the sexual immorality, the awful sexual practices and premarital sex, marriage crime, see? So America is going the way of Rome. See, we rose up as a great civilization thanks to a Judeo-Christian heritage and a few founding fathers who were very noble people. And like Benjamin Franklin said, well, you have a democracy if you can keep it, he said, or you have a republic. See, we had a republic, a representative government, but it's degenerating into mob rule. And the mob will say, give us Barabbas. You know, give us our pills and our booze and our drugs, and give us our entertainment. See? So now let's talk love. Let's talk about love. Let's talk about love. So you see, the dad who says, no, you can't go out after 10 o'clock with those people. Everybody else is going out. Dad, they're all going out. They're going to the concert. No, you're not going out after 10 o'clock. See? Now, the dad seems like a very mean person. But if you stop to think about it, is dad really such a mean person? Are you really missing out on something that's that important? No. See, but a lot of kids have been totally corrupted by the peer group. See, it's another form of corruption, the peer group. And so that becomes more important. What everybody else is doing is more important than what father says. But luckily, if you have a good father and he says no, and you say, okay, dad. See, but you think he's really mean, right? Like Mark Twain said, when I was 16, I thought my father was really dumb. And then when I was 20, I was amazed at how much he had learned in 5 short years. You know, something like that. Or, you know, the expression, was it Winston Churchill that said, if you're not a liberal when you're 20, then you don't have a heart. And if you're not a conservative when you're 40, then you don't have a brain. You know, that sort of thing. So we all, later on, we get older, we think back and we think, well, dad wasn't really mean. He said no because he loved me. See, he set standards because he loved me. He set boundaries because he loved me. See how that works? All right. And all the little friends out there that said, go ahead and take drugs and have promiscuous sex and all these kinds of things, it turns out they didn't really love you. See? They didn't really love you. They may have been misguided just like you. They may have been misguided. But the point is, it wasn't the kind of love that would do you any good. You see what I mean? All right, so let's talk about love. Let's talk about love, which we all know we need love. We all know that. We all know we need love, and we know love would somehow be good for us and would help us and might even cure us of our ills. A lot of people are depressed and unhappy and bitter and anxious and forlorn and despairing and so on. And somehow we sense that if there were love, see, but notice that the love has to have some truth in it. See, like for example, despair and hopelessness. Despair. See, if someone loved you and they, and, see, you learn the truth about God and that he exists and that he's there and you can find him if you search for him with all your heart, so on, then you would have hope. It would take away the despair. If someone says to you, well, we're just animals and evolution is what it's all about. We're just evolved animals and there's no God and it's all just, we just live and die, and then there's nothing. See? That's not truth. That's a lie. See? But if someone came with the real truth, see, then at first it may not be the truth may not be comforting at first, but then it's good for you. It takes away hopelessness. It takes away despair. It takes away depression. It takes away love, feeling unloved and unloved and loveless. See what I mean? So there has to be some truth. If someone tells you the truth, see, if you're walking down the street and your shoelace is untied and they come up to you and they say, hey, your shoelace is untied. See, if you're wise, you will say, well, thank you. You may be a little embarrassed that your shoelace was untied, but you're thank you. You're thankful. You say, thank you for telling me. If you hadn't told me, I might have tripped on my shoelace and gotten hurt. But if you're foolish, you'll resent the correction. See, you'll resent the fact that someone saw you in a bad light or saw you making a mistake. See, you'll resent the correction. And if you're extremely prideful, see, you may go around and not even tie your shoelace because you don't want to do what they said. See what I mean? All right. So now, I still haven't gotten to love, how God creates love. Now here's how God creates love. He creates love by giving us a choice factor. See, a monkey or a deer or a turkey, as I'm standing here looking out the window of my home, on across the street is a hill, and there's a path. And as I've been here, giving my little, making this little lecture, I look across the street and I can see the turkeys walking by on the path. We have wild turkeys in the neighborhood. I love watching the wild turkeys. But what I was going to say is they're very beautiful and very nice, the turkeys. But they don't have a choice factor. They can't choose, see, to search for God or not search for him. They cannot choose between doing right and doing wrong, see, between doing what they know in their heart or doing what somebody else says that conflicts with that. See, they cannot choose that. They cannot choose. They have no choice. Everything's laid out for them. They just follow their nature. But we humans, we have a choice, see. We have these choices we can make. And so we can go one way or we can go the other way. Okay? Now when it comes to choice, as far as God is concerned, it's basically where our soul inclines one way or it inclines another. It inclines one way or it inclines another. So it's not a choice in terms of I choose to do this or choose to do that. But it's leaning one way or the other. See, we can be selfish or not selfish. See, we can be kind or not kind. See, we can hate somebody or not hate them. We can resent somebody or we cannot resent them. You see what I mean? And then when it comes to God, our soul can incline toward truth or incline away from truth. Now there's the first big clue that I'm giving you now about God. See, our first encounter with God, our first encounter with God, see, has to do with truth. See, if you hear the truth, see, you either believe, if you believe the truth, see, if you like the truth, see, and then when you hear it, you quietly say yes. See, then now you're a little closer to God. See, God Truth is very important. Remember, John said God is truth and love. God has truth and love, and proceeding from him is truth and love. See? So just like sunlight, in sunlight you have light and you have heat. So the light is enlightening. When the light comes from the sun, then you can see things. You can discern things. See? And so truth is like a light for the mind, where you can see, you can discern truth from error, for example. Okay? And then there's warmth. The light from the sun contains both light, brightness, and warmth. See, which is like love. So there's truth and love. So truth, love, and love and truth is what we need. We need both. Okay? So there's the truth. Okay? Which way will you go? And it makes all the difference in the world. See? Let's say there's a parent, a little child comes up and says, Mommy, child has a little question, Daddy. And the parent said, leave me alone, I'm busy. I'm watching this football game. Or I'm talking with my friend on the phone. Just leave me alone. Can't you see that I'm busy? And then the little child, a little tear in the child's eye then. And then later the child says, Mommy, why were you mean, Mommy? See, now there is a moment of truth. There is a moment of truth in your heart. See, the parent, or you as a parent, you know in your heart that you were mean. You were impatient with your child. Okay, you know that's the truth. That's the truth. If you say, oh, I'm sorry. I was impatient. I'm sorry. See, you're honoring the truth. But if you harden your heart, if you harden your heart and say, don't talk to me that way. Don't you dare call me mean. I do a lot for you. I work my fingers to the bone. Did you do your homework yet? Don't you bother me when I'm talking to my friend on the phone. You understand? See, at that moment, see, you turn the other way. You turned away from truth. See, another classic example. This is a true story. And it was actually a father who was taking a child, and I heard the story, and it's true, taking the little daughter to preschool. And the little child didn't want to go to preschool. See? And she clung with her little arms around her father's neck. She didn't want to let go. There was something wrong. She didn't want to go. She didn't want to go. And in that moment, he looked into his heart, and he somehow knew, he sensed deep down in his heart that he should not take that child to the preschool. So he didn't. He withdrew the child from that preschool, and they did something else. I can't remember whether they homeschooled or found another preschool, or I can't remember. But the point was, he didn't force that little child to go. And then later on, months or years later, he found out that something really awful was happening in that preschool. Something really awful. A lot of parents will ignore their intuition. They'll ignore their intuition. Instead, they harden their heart. See, and they think, well, they'll come up with some excuse, some rationalization for not doing the right thing. Okay, so now you can see that there's a truth factor involved. So all through our life, as we go through life, there are many little moments of truth where we can either admit the truth, see, admit it, or deny the truth. Admit it or deny it. Now, I read, I believe it was Emanuel Swedenborg, he said angels immediately, when they hear the truth, for example, immediately they acknowledge it within their heart. They immediately acknowledge it. They, you know, it doesn't have to be words, but they just acknowledge it wordlessly. They just immediately acknowledge truth. See, they love the truth. They acknowledge the truth. All right. So we humans, see, you can either acknowledge, if somebody catches you doing something wrong, do you acknowledge it and say, I'm sorry, I apologize? Or do you harden your heart, see? Or do you look for an excuse? A rationalization, try to deny the truth, see, which is actually, it's bad enough to deny the truth. We've all done that. See, we were prideful, we denied the truth, we rushed off, we didn't want to admit we were wrong. We've all done that. It's like the story of the prodigal son. You know, Christ told the story of the prodigal son who asked for his inheritance, and then he went off and misspent all the inheritance in wrong living. And eventually he thought to himself, you know, here I am penniless and everything, you know, here I am penniless. I'd be better off living as a servant in my father's house. So he makes the long trip back to his father. And the closer he gets to his father's house, the more he doesn't want to go in. He doesn't want to face his father. He doesn't want to face him. But finally, he knocks on the door and the door opens. There's his father. He says, Father, I offended you, Father. I've been living wrongly. I wasted all the money. And I'm sorry, Father. I'm not worthy to be your son. And the father says, I know. I know you messed up. But welcome back, my son. Welcome back. And he opens his arms, embraces his son, said, welcome back. For I had lost a son, and now I have found my son. Come, let's have a party. Let's have a big feast and be happy, because I had lost my son, and now I have found my son. See how sweet that is? Okay, so we've all made mistakes. We've all fallen short. We've all done the wrong things. But the question is, when we see the truth about have our error, then will we be willing to admit the truth? Okay? Now, a lot of us have made mistakes and we've been prideful. See, humans are inherently prideful. We don't admit we're wrong. And so we end up, that's how we become in conflict with God. Now here's the beautiful part. And I'm still talking about love. How God extends his love. And how he created love by giving us freedom so we can mess up. See, if there was no freedom, what's the old expression? Evil forces us to be good, but God permits us to make mistakes. Something like that. See, so we made some mistakes, but there is something there. See, God can take anything and make it good. He can take a piece of dirt. See, he can take what cows and horses leave behind them. He can take that, put it in the ground, and it becomes fertilizer. It becomes fertilizer to grow a beautiful, beautiful roses and beautiful apple trees. You see what I mean? He can take anything and make it good. So he can take your mistakes that you made, okay? And he can make it into something good. So the mistakes can have a value, and that is, a lot of us mess up, and we keep messing up, and then we sink lower. Eventually, we've sunken so low, we're like the prodigal son. There we are, basically laying in the gutter, a complete mess, okay? And finally, we cry out to God. You know, what's the old expression? Well, we've tried everything else, so now let's try prayer. That's what we should have done first, right? But we're all too prideful. We want to roll up our sleeves. See, when we're young, we're very prideful. We think we're going to live forever. We go out there and think we get away with things. And we can get away with things for a while. But eventually we suffer for our mistakes. See, then we roll up our sleeves and try to save ourselves, or roll up our sleeves and try to compensate and have a self-improvement project. And it's good for a while, but it's not the total answer. A lot of times we make things worse. We're always rolling up our sleeves. Finally, we cry out to God. It was Lincoln and then Ronald Reagan. They asked Ronald Reagan, they said, do you pray? And he says, well, I agree with what Lincoln said. He said, sometimes there's nowhere else to go. He says, sometimes I get on my knees because there's nowhere else to go. I get on my knees because there's nowhere else to go. Somebody else said, the shortest distance between your problem and a solution is the distance between your knees and the floor. All right. Well, anyway, so now you got the idea. So we make a big mess out of everything, a great big chocolate mess out of everything. And finally, some of us will cry out to God. Our soul silently cries out. Okay? And at that point, and a lot of times it's when we're older, maybe 40 years old or something, our soul cries out to God. And this time our cry is sincere. We finally admit. See, we finally admit. I want to tell you another joke. A guy goes up to heaven, and there's St. Peter at the pearly gates. And St. Peter says, well, you can get into heaven, but you have to give us a secret password, otherwise you can't get in. So the guy said, John 3:16? St. Peter said, no. He said, Matthew 4:16? No. He said, 1 Corinthians 8:27? No. He kept trying verse after verse after verse. Finally, the guy said, I give up. Peter said, that's it. Come on in. See, I give up. So finally, we realize that we've made a mess out of everything, and it's giving up, but it's not throwing in the towel. It's not like, you know, it's not like despair. It's just, it's an honest, sincere realization that we can't fix our own mess. And we cry out to God, and He answers. Okay? All right. And then a lot of times, that's where salvation begins, in that moment. Okay? Now, I want to we're continuing to talk about love now. Talking about love. So we all have these moments when we could realize the truth. Okay? Where we can realize that we made a mistake or not. See how that works? All right. So as we go through life, we have opportunities to acknowledge the truth or to deny the truth. Now, the first God truth that God sends to us is our conscience. Okay, so right now you think, well, God's not answering my prayers and He's far away from me and so on and so forth. Well, He may be sort of far away. See, you haven't gotten close to Him. See, you've been denying the truth, trying to affirm your own goodness, your own pridefulness, your own ability to solve issues. See, you didn't want to admit you're wrong, you're prideful, and you probably resented some people. See, you resented some people and you were a little sneaky here and there, a little bit dishonest and a little selfish and, you know, all the usual things. Took drugs and whatever else you did. Had promiscuous sex. So you were a little bit naughty. But you didn't want to admit that you were wrong. So you were prideful. Okay, you were prideful. Now, all along, God has been there. Okay, so you're not close to God, but He didn't leave you without a lifeline. He left you with your conscience. He left you with your intuition, which is your closest link to God. I've always said intuition is your closest link to God. Okay? So you're actually closer than you think. So you have that lifeline. You have your intuition. That's how the soul wordlessly sees and knows things. See, by your intuition, look, if I'm somewhere, let's say I'm at a shopping mall, there's a parent. She's being impatient with her child. The child starts to cry, and then she grabs the child's arm in a really harsh way, just really grabs the child's arms really harshly, and says, "You keep quiet." I can see that she's being mean to the child. See, I can see that. Nobody can convince me differently. You could have 10,000 people come and say, no, she's not being mean, but I would see that she's being mean. See, I trust my intuition. What I see is what I see. Okay, well, that's intuition. Okay, so if somebody says 1 + 1 = 2, okay, you can memorize that. A parent can memorize 1 + 1 = 2 and say 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 1 = 2, but you can also see that 1 + 1 = 2. So you can see the principle. You see it wordlessly. You see the principle, and then later somebody says, well, what's 3001 + 1? And you can say 3002 because you see the principle. See? All right. So that's your intuition. Our first encounter with, how can I say this? We have intuition all of our life from the time we're little children. But the problem is when we go to school, nobody talks about our intuition. Everyone kind of discounts it. And instead, they talk about knowledge, so we become externalized. But nevertheless, we still have some intuition, and from time to time, we sense, especially when we're young people can see what's true or not very often. Young people are close to truth. But what happens is that As we get older, we start to do more and more things that are not right. One of the big things that we do that's not right is we resent other people. We resent our mom, we resent our dad, we resent somebody at work, see? We resent other people. And when we resent other people, it's wrong to resent because resentment is a little bit of hatred and judgment. So when we resent someone else, then our conscience would make us aware that it's wrong to resent another person. See what I mean? Or we're a little bit sneaky, like I said, or a little bit dishonest, or a little bit selfish, little things like that, see? Or we take drugs, or whatever we do, these things begin to accumulate, so we develop conflict with conscience, which is basically conflict with God. See? Because God would like to make you aware that you're making boo-boos, that you're making mistakes. And he wants to make you aware so you can stop making them and get better. See? That's the whole purpose of our conscience. We know in our heart that we know something, we did something wrong in our heart. We know it. That's the purpose. It's actually from God. So if you, let's say you get angry at someone or you're impatient with somebody, then afterwards, what, you feel a little bad inside? Okay, well, that's your conscience. That's from God. God sends you his light so you can intuit which way to go, see? And it's present sight and foresight when it's intuition. But when we stray from the proper way, then it feels like conscience. It feels like hindsight. So now, would you like to get closer to God? Okay, it's very simple. From now on, just acknowledge the truth whenever you see it. Whether you realize it within, whether somebody says the truth, see, even if it's in the mouths of a little child, so who says the truth, okay? Acknowledge the truth. And especially if you've done something a little bit wrong. You're a little impatient with somebody, or you resent your mom, or you resent your wife, or your husband. Okay, you become aware of the fact that you resent it and that's not right. Then just admit it in your heart. Admit that truth. Acknowledge that truth within. Okay? Now, what a lot of us do, see, we let's say we're mean to somebody, or we're rude, we're impatient, we're angry, we're hostile. Then we sense it. Then what do? We try to cover it up. And we try to be nice to them. We try to make up to them to assuage conscience, to get rid of our conscience, see? Then a lot of times we bend over backwards and we're extra nice. We're even too nice to make up for our guilt, see? Always trying to make up for guilt. A lot of families, everybody resents everybody else in the family, so they all act like they love each other, but it's all out of guilt. A lot of women serve their husband out of guilt, see? Because guilt for what? Guilt for resenting and judging. All right. So we serve other people out of guilt, but that's not good. Okay, so what's the answer then? When your conscience makes you aware that you did something that's not quite right, then just admit it in your heart. Admit the truth in your heart, okay? And that's how you get a little closer to God. So if you start to honor the truth in these little moments, then you begin to wake up. You begin to wake up to reality. You begin to wake up to the way things are. You begin to see more and more clearly, and you're actually coming closer to God. See, the other thing that keeps us from God is we get lost down in our imagination. Everybody always says, you know, get lost in your imagination and dream of this and visualize that and study and study and study. The more we study, the more we think, the more we get lost in words, the more we get lost in imagination, daydreams and pipe dreams and thinking about what we could have done or should have done and dreaming about what we're going to do in the future and reminiscing about the past and trying to rearrange the past. And see, when you're lost down in your imagination and your thoughts down there, you're farther away from God. You will not find God in the intellect. You won't find God in your imagination. You find God in reality when you wake up from the imagination, when you wake up from your daydreams. See? How many of you have been driving down the freeway? You drive right past your exit because you were lost in thinking. See? Not good. See? When you're lost down there and you're thinking, you're actually closer to the devil down there. See, the devil approaches the soul in the imagination, whispers things to the mind. You could do this. You could be powerful. You could be great. You could be rich. This is your one and only chance. Go ahead. Everybody else is doing it. See? It eggs you on to do wrong things, and then it excuses and justifies whatever you did that wasn't right. And then finally, when that voice, that faceless voice down in your imagination, see, or dressing up in images of love and hate, sex and violence, see, there it is tempting your soul with images of sex or images of violence. Then after it's totally corrupted you, See? Then it says you're no good, God hates you, you've committed the unforgivable sin, you're beyond hope, there is no God, blah, 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 blah. It's always the same old story. See? So it basically wants to kill you, and God wants to save you. Okay? So the way God saves you is he sends you your conscience, your intuition and your conscience. Well, it's like the old joke of a guy that, there was a flood and the water was rising, so he went up on the roof, and then somebody came by in a rowboat. And the guy said, no, he said, I don't need to take the rowboat, God will save me. So then the water is rising higher and higher, and now it's up to the roof, and then here comes a guy by in a motorboat. And he said, no, I'm not going to get on this motorboat, I'm waiting for God to save me. And now the water is all the way up to the top, and the water is over his, rising above the level of the roof, and now he's standing knee-deep in the water, and here comes a helicopter, and he waves the helicopter off, and he says, no, I don't need this helicopter, I'm waiting for God to save me. So finally the water rises up to below his chin, and he says, God help me. So God, all of a sudden the voice from heaven says, well, here I am. And the voice says, what's your problem? I sent you a rowboat and a motorboat and a helicopter. See, so all those helps actually came from God. So the point is, God sends you conscience and intuition. So begin to pay attention to your intuition. Begin to pay attention to your conscience when it makes you aware that you did something a little bit off. See? And acknowledge the truth right away, and you'll get closer and closer and closer to God. Okay? Well, I hope you've enjoyed this introduction to finding God.